Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan.
Season 11, Episode 8, Tumult and Turnover in Joseon. When we last left the Joseon Dynasty, they had suffered a devastating invasion from their Japanese neighbors and an almost equally devastating relief effort by the Ming Dynasty. The reign of King Sanjo, who served as the national sovereign throughout the Imjin War and into the early 1600s, had not gone well. Throughout the prosecution of the war with Japan, the king had largely stepped aside and allowed Crown Prince Kwanghye to manage the wartime government. The Crown Prince probably did his best, but by the time the king put him in charge, the invasion was well underway and the Joseon national defenses all but destroyed. After the Imjin War ended, the nation was socially, economically, spiritually, and physically in shambles. I mentioned last season that some estimates of the Korean death toll from the Imjin War set the casualties at around 1 million people. A loss of that magnitude is not going to be compensated for overnight, and its ripples would be felt by the Joseon Kingdom throughout the 1600s and beyond. It is not unusual for a nation ravaged by war to fall into political infighting when reconstruction ensues. In 1606, just 2 years before King Sanjo died, the most influential political faction in the royal court, called the Northerners, suffered a schism in its ranks, with many of its members following Hog Yun, a progressive nobleman who wanted to challenge the conservative Confucian elements in Joseon society. A renowned novelist and poet, Hog Yun was very popular, and the faction who followed his lead became known as the Greater Northerners, because they were more numerous, and their rival faction was labeled the Lesser Northerners. The Lesser Northerners frequently joined with their former rivals, the Westerners and Southerners, to plot against the Greater Northerners and try to push a more conservative agenda. In 1608, King Sanjo died, and Prince Kwanghye was installed as the new sovereign. Although he had been wielding practical power since the beginning of the Imjin War, newly crowned King Kwanghye's position as monarch was not entirely secure. He was not the eldest son, and his mother was a royal consort, but not an official queen. The late King Sanjo's eldest son showed signs of violent sociopathy, and was involved with some of his brothers in the murder of a nobleman. It was only through King Sanjo's intervention that their lives were spared, but their subsequent exile meant that they were ineligible to serve as king. Regardless of their unsuitability, the more conservative-leaning factions at court often observed that the new king was not entirely in keeping with the standard protocols of Korean succession. Fueling the fire of opposition to King Kwanghye was the ghost of his father, King Sanjo. While the late king was initially satisfied that succession would pass to the then-crown prince, in 1606, his official queen gave birth to a son. Before his death in 1608, King Sanjo had been secretly working with a scholar official from the Lesser Northerners faction to arrange for his infant son, Prince Yongchang, to succeed him upon his death instead of the consort-born crown prince. King Sanjo died before the documents could be promulgated and made official, but the Lesser Northerners involved in the intrigue held on to the secret will, likely hoping to make use of it in a future coup. In 1613, however, their secret was discovered by an investigation led by the Greater Northerners, who eagerly pounced upon their political rivals. Exiles and executions were handed down in the subsequent reckoning, and the 8-year-old Prince Yongchang was executed the following year. Although King Kwanghye desired to bring all of the factions of court together to engage in the massive reconstruction efforts which the nation required, the Greater Northerners did not share this vision and instead sought to consolidate power for themselves. The incident with the secret will of King Sanjo enabled them to further pursue political purges, and they swiftly removed many of their rivals from their offices and installed their own partisans in their place. They even went so far as to strip Queen Inmok, the mother of Prince Yongchang, of her official titles and imprison her. In spite of the constant political spats, King Kwanghye managed to enact a number of reforms which helped Joseon recover from their wartime devastation. He arranged for land redistribution to help spur agriculture and restore the nation's food supply chain. He reintroduced the Hopei system, wherein subjects of Joseon carried metal identification tags which indicated their names, their birthplace, and their home province. In 1609, he restored diplomatic relations with Japan, and even restored trade relations in 1617, exchanging goods with the Japanese through the Seoul clan of Tsushima. However, one area in which his diplomatic and political acumen failed him was the rise of the later Jin dynasty of Manchuria. While we have the benefit of hindsight to know that opposing the Jin dynasty would be a terrible mistake with negative future consequences, the royal court in Korea did not have this advantage. The Jurchen people who led the later Jin were considered roughneck barbarians by the courtly noblemen of Joseon, who thought of their northern neighbors as being little different than the Mongols who had once occupied their peninsula after 8 brutal, bloody invasions. In 1618, the Khan of the later Jin, Nurhaci, announced the 7 grievances against the Ming dynasty, and the two polities were officially at war. King Kuangye wanted to maintain friendly relations with the later Jin while still respecting the tributary arrangement with the Ming dynasty, a political position that everyone else hated. In 1619, possibly seeking to assuage the Ming hardliners in the court, King Kuangye sent about 10,000 Joseon soldiers to aid their war against the later Jin. The leader of this expeditionary force was one Gang Hong-rip, a general who would become a pivotal figure in Korean history. The Joseon auxiliaries joined a Ming army of around 100,000 who had been sent to face down 60,000 warriors of the later Jin, who were under the direct command of Nurhaci himself. Although the Ming forces had a significant numerical advantage, their troops were composed of 4 separate divisions which were intended to each converge upon the city of Fushun, which the later Jin had just recently conquered and were using as a capital. The Imjin War radically changed the nature of warfare in Korea, and by the late 1610s, many of its soldiers were musketeers, who carried matchlock arquebuses much like their Japanese foes a few decades earlier. Unfortunately, the Jurchen style of fighting was not easily overcome by massed gunfire alone, and Nurhaci was not foolish enough to just sit in Fushun and wait for it to be surrounded by a larger force. The approach of the Ming army was not well coordinated, and Nurhaci was able to use his 60,000 troops to overcome divisions of around 40,000 with ease. The Jurchen fighting style utilized horse archery and mass charges of heavy cavalry in a way that proved very effective against the Ming forces. It was even more effective against the Joseon auxiliaries, whose musketeers were mercilessly ridden down by later Jin cavalry. Over 2/3 of the men sent by King Kuangye were killed in battle, and their leader, General Gang Hong-rip, was taken prisoner. Later called the Battle of Sarhu, the 5-day engagement left the local Ming army in ruins and shattered any hope in the Joseon court that their patrons in the Ming dynasty would easily overcome this upstart barbarian dynasty. It also put Joseon on Nurhaci's radar to a greater degree, and gave him a good pretense for future aggression on the peninsula. Meanwhile, King Kuangye's inclusive tendencies at court were not gaining him any support from any particular faction, and nearly all the ministers hated his indifference toward the conflict between the Ming and later Jin. A group of scholar officials belonging to the ultra-conservative Westerner faction decided to enact a change in the national leadership. In the spring of 1623, with the support of wealthy and powerful nobles who were equally dissatisfied with King Kuangye's rule, the plotters initiated a coup, leading soldiers into the palace to take the sovereign into custody. Although he initially fled and hid, King Kuangye was found and placed under arrest. The king was squirreled away to Jeju Island, and a violent political purge proceeded, which killed his chief ministers and expelled most of the greater northerners who occupied official posts and replaced them with their fellow Westerner partisans. To replace the ousted sovereign, they installed the son of Prince Jongwon, a son of the late King Sonjo and his official queen. The new monarch was known as King Injo, and while he would later make significant contributions to Joseon's history and culture, at the beginning of his reign he was little more than a puppet of the Westerners who had put him in power. Unfortunately for national harmony and governmental stability, not all the plotters were satisfied with the new status quo which they had helped create. General Yi Gual had played a pivotal role in the coup, holding key points of the capital with his troops to maintain control while King Kuangye was placed in custody. As a reward for his service, he was stationed at the northern border, where he prepared troops to meet the inevitable invasion from the later Jin dynasty. By all accounts, he was satisfied with this posting and was eager to do battle with Chosun's enemies. However, he was not a member of the Westerner faction and had closer ties with the Northerners. This affiliation made some of his fellow plotters nervous now that the coup had been carried out and so many of Yiquan's supposed allies had been ousted from government or executed. The Westerners submitted a petition to King Yinzhou asking permission to investigate an alleged treason plot involving certain Northerners. King Yinzhou gave the document his rubber stamp, and General Yiquan was put under intense investigation, which he did not at all appreciate. In spite of his no doubt bitter attitude toward his investigators, ultimately the matter came to nothing, and the accusations were dismissed due to a lack of evidence. The Westerners, greatly unhappy with this result, decided to shift tactics. They convinced the king to order the arrest of Yi Zhan, the son of Yiquan. When Yiquan learned of the arrest order, he killed the party sent to take his son in early 1624 and launched a full-fledged rebellion. With around 12,000 troops under his direct command, General Yiquan ordered a quick march south and soon gained an advantage over his enemies, who were uncertain of his army's position and vulnerable to surprise attacks and ambushes. After a few successful battles fought in guerrilla fashion, Yiquan entered the capital of Hansong itself, and after defeating a loyalist army at Imjin River, the royal court evacuated Hansong, and King Yinzhou hurriedly abandoned the city. Yiquan's forces easily captured the capital, and he even went so far as to install a new sovereign, one of King Yinzhou's brothers, and began establishing a new administrative government council. However, if Yiquan thought that the rest of the nation would simply fall in line behind his new puppet government, he was extremely mistaken. More loyalist armies as well as provincial militias descended upon Hansong shortly after Yiquan attempted to set up shop. He sent some of his trusted lieutenants to lead army divisions against the loyalist forces, but the loyalists had seized strategically advantageous positions, and in the ensuing fighting the rebels were soundly routed. In mid-February of 1624, just 3 weeks after the rebellion began, General Yiquan ordered his army to disperse and departed the capital as government troops approached. He was shortly thereafter murdered by his own officers, who hoped that the government would take mercy upon them. Though it did not last very long and ultimately completely unraveled, Yiquan's rebellion was significant for one very important factor. This was the first time since the foundation of the Chosun dynasty in which a king had been driven from the capital by a rebel army. It also revealed that the balance in power in Korea was quite fragile, and while the Westerner faction was still generally in control, they did not possess anything resembling a popular national mandate. Not all of Yiquan's officers chose the path of betrayal. Some of his more loyal officers managed to flee north and depart the kingdom of Chosun in favor of the welcoming arms of the later Qin dynasty. They regaled Nurhaci with reports of how destabilized Korea had become thanks to the plotting of the Western aristocrats who had put a puppet king on the throne. In 1627, the Manchus took full advantage of the weakened state of Chosun and invaded the peninsula with an army 30,000 strong, partly with the help of those defectors, along with Gang Hong Rip, the unfortunate commander who led the ill-fated Chosun forces at the Battle of Sarhu. As you may recall from two episodes previous, this invasion occurred about a year after the death of Nurhaci, who died from an artillery wound received at the Battle of Ningyuan. The Chosun dynasty had been allowing a Ming army to station in an area called Weiju, near the Liaodong Peninsula, for regular raids conducted against Manchuria. Hong Taiji directed the invasion of Korea from afar, entrusting his army to his generals. The initial incursions against the border towns met determined resistance from the Chosun garrisons, but they were soon overcome through hard fighting. The Manchus then approached the camp at Weiju, where General Mao Wenlong was waiting with around 25,000 Ming troops. Rather than stay and fight against the Manchu army, however, General Mao Wenlong ordered a full retreat and fled hurriedly to where the anchored Ming fleet transported them to safe territory across the Bohai Sea. Though he would later be executed for this transparent act of utter cowardice, that would be little comfort to the residents of Chosun, who soon experienced the unbridled wrath of the Manchu invaders. Within weeks of entering the country, the advancing Manchu army had taken several key cities and even managed to seize Pyongyang without a fight. King Injo once more fled the capital, this time heading for Ganghwa Island as a safe fallback. Desperate to protect the nation against another rapacious invasion, the king dispatched a negotiator to sue for peace with the primary invasion leader, a Jurchen general named Amin. Hong Taiji had dispatched this general with explicit instructions to negotiate a peace as soon as it was asked for, but Amin allowed his troops to loot and pillage Pyongyang while the negotiations were still underway. There were rumors that Amin wanted to make himself the king of the Korean Peninsula, and this may be somewhat confirmed by the fact that he would later face charges of treason and eventually die while imprisoned for his betrayal. In the spring of 1627, however, he agreed to a peace with Chosun, which was, all things considered, fairly generous. The terms of the treaty were threefold. Chosun would abandon using its current era name, which was marked for the sitting Ming Emperor. A hostage would be sent to the later Jin dynasty, and Chosun and the later Jin would respect each other's territory. A further addendum that was tacked on afterwards stated that the markets in northern Korea would be open to trade with the later Jin dynasty. This was the primary reason for the invasion. Hong Taiji needed a source of supply if he hoped to continue his late father's resistance to the Ming dynasty. Regular tribute was also arranged, which included tiger skins, horses, cotton, and fine cloth. It is hard to overstate the horror which the average Chosun scholar official would have felt upon hearing of this arrangement. The Chosun dynasty owed its very existence to the Ming dynasty, who were the only legitimate dynasty in China by their reckoning. For the royal court to bend its knee to a barbarian khanate who happened to get lucky in an invasion was beyond the limits of their tolerance. They protested this decision, and King Injo pretended that he had only made the agreement to settle the war and had no intention of rendering any real fealty to the later Jin dynasty. During the years after the defeat of 1627, Hong Taiji observed a troubling trend in the correspondence he kept with the sovereign of Chosun. He complained to his nobles and courtiers that the Koreans behaved as though the invasion had never happened. Their tribute was gradually less and less in keeping with their arrangement, and they continued to trade with the Ming dynasty, which helped support the war effort of the later Jin's enemy. In 1636, just 9 years after the first invasion, Hong Taiji decided that Chosun needed reminding of the new status quo. The last straw came when he had, earlier that year, changed his dynasty's name from later Jin to Qing, and Chosun had repeatedly refused to acknowledge this change. In late 1636, the newly branded Qing dynasty organized a much larger army to implement a much more thorough subjugation of Chosun. A massive Manchu force of around 100,000, augmented by Ming defectors, crossed onto the Korean Peninsula, and the fighting that ensued was ferocious and costly for both sides. While the Chosun troops who had been defeated at the Battle of Sarhu had been overly reliant on muskets alone, the armed forces of Korea had developed new techniques since that ill-fated battle. They now utilized mixed platoons, which featured musketeers alongside spearmen. The spears could prevent a disastrous cavalry charge and protect the gunners, whose ranged weapons could protect the spearmen in turn. King Injo, in a rather heroic turn, led troops personally against the Qing invaders. While the former invasion had largely been a one-sided affair, the second invasion was a difficult fight on both sides, with the famous Jurchen cavalry taking massive casualties at the hands of mixed spears and guns platoons. Chosun troops likewise managed to disrupt siege works and destroy enemy powder magazines, but ultimately King Injo found himself trapped in the besieged Namhan fortress, and after the Qing had cut off all supply to the fortress, he surrendered. He may have been partly motivated by the seizure of Ganghwa Island, which placed all of his wives under the hospitality of the Qing dynasty. The terms of the Second Peace Treaty were much more severe than the first, and it included the provisions that King Injo had to send his first and second sons as hostages, that Chosun had to support the Qing invasion of Ming territory, and that the king would encourage his ministers to intermarry with the noble families of the Qing dynasty. The two wars with the Qing dynasty left Chosun's economy in shambles, and King Injo's reputation was thus cemented as that of a sovereign who bowed to barbarian powers. The bitterness over this final submission to the Qing dynasty would last far beyond King Injo's reign, and Chosun's status as a tributary state to a barbarian dynasty was a point of shame for scholar officials for many centuries to come. Chosun was now a member of the Qing dynasty's tributary system, a position in which it would continue to exist until the Chosun dynasty came to an end. In 1645, after the Qing dynasty took Beijing, the Chosun hostages were allowed to return to the peninsula. Crown Prince Sohyun, King Injo's eldest child and official heir, had learned much during his captivity and wanted to apply his knowledge towards strengthening the realm. In particular, he wanted to allow Roman Catholic missionaries to spread their religion in Korea and to more closely tie the Chosun dynasty to the Qing, who were clearly the ascendant power in China proper. This was broadly interpreted by the king and his court as a sign that the crown prince had been irredeemably corrupted by the barbarians and was no longer fit to succeed his father. Crown Prince Sohyun's plans for reforming the nation were put on hold indefinitely when he died shortly after coming home to Hansong. His body was reportedly found in his father's chamber, mysteriously bleeding from his head. Later embellishments claim that he was killed with an inkstone, though poison was also proposed as the most likely means of dispatch. When his wife tried to organize her own investigation of her husband's untimely death, she was brought up on trumped-up charges of treason and executed, while their sons were exiled to Jeju Island. King Injo eventually died in 1649, leaving the throne to his new heir, Crown Prince Hyojong. The newly anointed King Hyojong had also endured captivity under the Qing dynasty, and largely spent his time as a hostage protecting his older brother when he went to battle, and observing the shifts in military power that occurred during the mid-1600s in China. Shortly after his ascension, he set to work expelling allegedly corrupt scholar officials, expanding Chosun's military capabilities, and reinforcing the border forts along the Amnok River, which acted as the official border between Korea and Manchuria. Such reinforcement of fortifications was absolutely forbidden by the peace treaty which was signed after the Second Manchu invasion, but the Qing dynasty had bigger problems than policing their peninsular tributary neighbor in the mid-1600s. In addition to their campaigns against the southern Ming dynasty, the Qing also needed to protect their northern borders from Russian aggression. In 1654, they prepared to face off against their Russian neighbors and called upon the Chosun dynasty for military assistance. Though he almost certainly loathed giving any aid to the Qing, their own military was not yet strong enough to take on the ascendant dynasty of China, especially now that they were reinforced by so many Han armies who had now defected to the Manchu banner. However, this auxiliary duty allowed the Chosun troops to test their new tactics and strategies against an enemy and observe the behaviors of the Qing armies to see if they might find some way to earn their independence in a future war. The first Battle of Hutong was a rather paltry affair, involving fewer than 2,000 total troops. The result was a technical Qing victory, but this was far from decisive. 4 years later, the Second Battle of Hutong finally decided who would have control over the Amur region, and Chosun soldiers would be present again to assist the Qing in their more decisive victory. The Amur region was ceded to the Qing by default, and the few Russians who remained in a local garrison deserted their posts soon after the battle ended. The economic problems left behind by King Injo's reign had not disappeared during King Hyojong's time on the throne. In addition to bolstering the military, he minted coins and tried to encourage agricultural renewal through the publication of books about farming. His ultimate goal was to rebuild Korea into an economic powerhouse and make its military strong enough to free them from the yoke of the Qing dynasty. This was far from an easy task, especially given how many years must be invested in an agrarian economy before it begins to see real growth. The stress of trying to make Chosun an independent kingdom capable of defending itself from its considerably ferocious neighbors proved to be far too stressful for King Hyojong, and he died in 1659 at the relatively young age of 39. He was succeeded by his son, who is remembered as King Hyunjong. The new sovereign already had many pressing issues before him, and the scholar officials decided to add another to the beginning of his reign. The issue at hand was how long of a mourning period the newly widowed queen should observe for her husband, the late King Hyojong. The Westerners and Southerners engaged in a heated exchange regarding Confucian ideals and traditions, and whether she should wear funeral garments for 1 year or 3. Although the principal issue was the observation of mourning, I think this was a case of a small issue suddenly being thrown into primary importance because of the larger political tapestry of the moment. By 1659, all practical signs pointed to a permanent decline of the Ming dynasty, which by this point had lost almost all of its land in China and whose imperial court had fled to Burma to escape from Qing aggression. Much as the scholar officials of Chosun might hope for a resurgent Hail Mary from their longtime ally and suzerain, it was clear by 1659 that the dynasty was in its death throes, and I think this caused something of an identity crisis in Korean government. The Ming dynasty had come to power as a reactionary force against the Mongol Yuan dynasty, a restorer of the proper political order and champions of traditional Confucianism and Han supremacy. Now that they were undeniably gone, and the Chosun dynasty left to its own devices under so-called barbarian domination, they would need to become their own source of Confucian philosophy and proper behavior. Thus, these seemingly small issues like a mourning period for the widowed queen suddenly became intellectual battlegrounds to determine which party would enjoy the status of superior Confucians. Ultimately, the king decided on a shorter mourning period, but he was careful to maintain a balance of power between the Westerners and Southerners in his court. While this meant no purges for the time being, it also meant frequent conflicts and flare-ups between the scholar officials who acted as partisans for their faction. In 1666, a captive Dutchman named Hendrik Hamel escaped from Korean custody. The unfortunate sailor had shipwrecked with his crew near Jeju Island while on a trade mission to Japan in 1653. He and his fellow Dutch sailors were imprisoned, and while they were allowed some liberties while on the peninsula, they weren't permitted to leave. After being relocated to an area near Yeosu on the coast, he and his seven fellow surviving crew took a boat which they had purchased along with what supplies they managed to gather and escaped in the dead of night. They arrived at the Goto Islands and were rescued by the Japanese, who brought them to Dejima. Hendrik Hamel wrote all about his experience among the Koreans, and his book served as a first look at Korea for many Europeans of his day. King Hyeonchong tried desperately to encourage science, learning, and literacy throughout his reign in spite of being constantly hamstruck by feuding scholar officials. Famine struck the kingdom in the early 1670s, and the stress of dealing with this crisis amid a myriad other issues took a toll on the still young sovereign. In 1674, he died at the age of 33 and was succeeded by his son, who was remembered as King Sukjong. The beginning of King Sukjong's reign was marred by, wait for it, a dispute about proper mourning periods. The new king, however, decided to adopt a different tactic for dealing with the constantly feuding factions of the scholar officials. He embraced the conflict. Under his reign, factions would rise in power, be accused of treason by jealous rivals, be exiled or executed and driven from politics, then said jealous rivals would become the most influential, then they would be accused of treason, then rinse and repeat. Sometimes the leading faction would try to get a jump on their diminished rivals by accusing them of treason first, but this backfired on at least one occasion when the in-power Southerners tried to accuse the Westerners of treason, only to find themselves dismissed, exiled, and executed by orders of the king for plotting against government ministers. King Sukjong developed a talent for promoting his reform agenda in spite of the political skullduggery that surrounded his court. He introduced a new form of currency, coins called moon, reformed taxation, eased the rules governing eligibility for the civil service exam, which allowed middle-class people a pathway into a government career, and established closer ties with both the Qing dynasty and the shogunate of Japan. His reign spanned from 1674 to 1720, and he died at the relatively ripe old age of 58. Toward the end of his life, he gave greater latitude to his son, Crown Prince Gyeongjong, to govern on his behalf. When he died in 1720, a minister at his deathbed claimed that he had secretly told him he wanted the Crown Prince's younger brother to succeed him instead. This led to a series of violent purges in the years following King Gyeongjong's elevations. Given the late King Sukjong's tendency toward using such violent purges for his own ends, I can only imagine him looking on from the afterlife and nodding with enthusiastic approval. While King Sukjong's reign was characterized by political violence, The end result was a more prosperous Joseon with a robust capital economy, a bustling agrarian sector, a stable and solvent government, and expanded opportunities for the middle class. As for his son, King Kyungjong, we will discuss his reign next season. Next time, we will return, at last, to Japan, in 1680, and resume our discussion of the reign of newly appointed shogun Tokugawa Tsunayoshi.
Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.